Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 79. My name is John. Some folks inherit star-spangled eyes. Ooh, they send you down to war, lot. And when you ask them, how much should we give? Oh, they only answer, more, more, more. I'm no longer a big fan of the National Football League. In the hierarchy of types of football around the world, my list goes like this, from best to worst. Australian football, not only the best form of football, probably the best sport on the planet. Arena football, Canadian football, American football, the NFL, rugby, Gaelic football, international rules football, any other conceivable type of football, and soccer. So, you can see the NFL, while fun to watch, is pretty middle of the road for me. I don't even have a favorite team, really. I guess if you forced me to pick one, I'd have to go with the New Orleans Saints. But I also like the Bengals, the Panthers, Packers, Cardinals, Buccaneers, and Browns to a certain extent. I don't even really hate any one team anymore. I do enjoy a fair amount of Schadenfreude when the Cowboys fall apart every year. But that's because Cowboys fans in South Texas surround me, and they often have trouble reconciling reality because of the love for their team. Now, that didn't used to be the case. When I was younger, I was a huge Cowboys fan. Again, because it's South Texas, and that's kind of what's expected. I was 10 years old when the Cowboys played the NFC Championship against the 49ers, and Dwight Clark made the catch to win the game. Because of that, for many years, I hated the Niners. There's probably still some residual disdain for the team. Moreover, I think they made a huge mistake a couple of years ago getting rid of Alex Smith in favor of Colin Kaepernick. I thought Kaepernick was unproven, and his early success filling in for the injured Smith wouldn't last. And sure enough, he had one good year that wasn't quite enough to win the Super Bowl. And to be honest, that bicep kiss looks kind of douchey. And yes, I know, there's plenty of douchey things that quarterbacks like to do, like Cam Newton's Superman gimmick. But I'm okay with that because I like Superman. Johnny Manziel has that money hand gesture. That's cool because I like earning money too. But I'm not a workout kind of guy. If you've ever seen me, you know that's the case. And there's just something about that bicep kiss that reminds me of some meathead gym rats I used to know. So, there's a quarterback I don't really like on a team I don't really like, playing a sport that I don't like near as much as I used to. But here I am talking about him. A few weeks ago, Kaepernick initially refused to stand for the national anthem, and then a short time later, and ever since, kneels during the national anthem as a protest to the rash of horrific incidents where police officers have killed suspects, specifically white police officers killing black suspects. Now, this set off a backlash of people believing it is disrespectful for him to do so because it's the national anthem. Kaepernick has stated that is specifically why he chose not to stand with his hand over his heart, as everybody else expects him to do, and almost everybody else does. And I'll get to his reasoning in a bit, and share a quote that hasn't gotten enough press, but first, I want to give my thoughts on the national anthem preceding every sporting event. What is the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner? It's a song. Strip it away to its bare essence, and that's all it is. It's just a song. There are a handful of other songs that could have easily been the anthem of the United States of America. Now, today, most would be considered too religious or too overtly political. So, we settled on one about war. Given our society for the past few generations, it's probably pretty apt. The music itself is quite nice, I think. It has that one high note that a good singer can hit, and it can sound quite powerful. But it is still just a song. It wasn't even officially used by any portion of the United States government until 1889, and it's only been the official anthem for about 85 years, and it was around for about 100 years before that. It was only used sporadically in baseball games until the early 20th century, and it wasn't played before every game until World War II. Which is interesting, because that was also the time when America was coming out of the Great Depression, caused in part, and then extended far longer than anywhere else in the world by imbecilic actions of the government. Not wanting a crisis to go to waste, the government started regulating more and more of the country during that time. I think it's far from surprising that a patriotic reminder before every single baseball game, then the national pastime, was put into place. Forget all the bullshit the quickly growing bureaucracy is doing. Ignore the erosion of your rights. Watch a ball game, but before you do, get used to standing and thinking about how patriotic you are for supporting the actions of your government. By the way, the Pledge of Allegiance, same thing, even worse. But that's another podcast. Why must we have the anthem before a game? Seriously, stop for a moment and ask yourself that. Anybody under the age of 70 in the United States has known nothing but standing with your hand over your heart and listening to and maybe even singing along with the national anthem for every single goddamn sporting event we've ever attended. Other than tradition, other than the excuse of, that's what we've always done, what logic, what reason is there for insisting on playing the national anthem? What does patriotism even have to do with games? Now, if you want to pause the podcast and ponder that, please go ahead. I'll be here when you get back. I'll be honest. I've gotten to the point of flipping the channel or finding something else to do during the national anthem when I'm in front of the TV. Those times when I do find myself stuck listening to it, I inwardly hope that they just simply sing the song. The national anthem, especially for the major sporting events, your Super Bowl, your NBA Finals, your World Series, has become little more than a game of one-upsmanship from one singer to the next. I mean, seriously, divas, how many notes can you make out of free? How much more do you think you can stretch this thing out? I mean, seriously, we're getting into Bleeding Gums Murphy territory here. The singers are making it more about showing off in the spotlight than the song itself. Now look, I like traditions. I like passing out Halloween candy. I like a whole roasted turkey for a Thanksgiving dinner. I like watching fireworks on New Year's and the 4th of July. But if I have other plans, I don't pass out candy on Halloween night. The past several Thanksgivings have been dinner out at a restaurant. Gina and I have skipped fireworks for both New Year's and Independence Day this year. Just because I like it, just because I enjoy the tradition, doesn't mean I have to do it every time. For Christmas, every year, I have to watch A Charlie Brown Christmas, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and, new tradition, replacing the Mystery Science Theater episode of Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, the recent Riff Tracks live performance of Santa Claus. By the way, if you haven't heard of that, go look for it. Find it. You'll love it. Charlie Brown Christmas, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Riff Tracks Live Santa Claus. That's my list. That's my tradition at Christmas. I have to watch all three of those things. I mentioned that on Facebook a few years back, and I actually got people criticizing me for my list. Well, you didn't include that, or why do you have to have that on there? You should be watching this instead. Anybody else have the same list as me? I'm going to bet the answer is no, because that's my tradition. I don't expect anyone else to follow along with it. It makes me happy. You should do what makes you happy. Make what you like your tradition, not what other people tell you your tradition should be. You know when the national anthem should matter at a sporting event? It should matter when one national team plays another national team, like the Olympics or the World Cup. Other than that, why should we be required to play it? Isn't it enough that the Olympics insist on playing the national anthem of the winning athlete or team? You played for your country. You won. Here's your country song. Yeehaw. I know I'm an American. I am fully aware of which country I was born and raised and live in. I don't need the constant repetition of a song to remind me. Living your life, honoring natural rights we are supposed to have in this country, is far more patriotic than 2.5 minutes of standing at musical attention. Instead of the Star Spangled Banner, if you really have to do something patriotic, how about reading the preamble to the Constitution, or random excerpts from the Bill of Rights, or reminders of what people in positions of authority are and are not allowed to do to citizens? You know what? If I ever become the owner of a team, I'm going to do that. I'm going to replace the Star Spangled Banner with 90-second reminders of your rights before every game. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Now, all I need is to become super rich. The national anthem, as I mentioned earlier, has been played at the beginning of every baseball game since World War II. We have the so-called Greatest Generation, Baby Boomers, Gen Xers, Millennials. So now we're about to go into a fifth generation of people who, for all their lives, have stood for the national anthem like good little citizens, rarely, if ever, questioning why. Just because you stand up and put your hand over your heart, that's patriotism? When does it go from honoring America to blind jingoism? I said it earlier, I'll say it again. Protecting someone's right to expression is far more patriotic than standing for a song. And protecting someone's right to express something that you disagree with is an even stronger example of patriotism. You can call him all the names you want. You can sneer at the mention of his name. You can burn his jersey. You can boycott his games. But you cannot stop him from expressing himself. What he is doing may be upsetting to your delicate sensibilities, but he is not affecting your natural rights. So Colin Kaepernick has every right to do what he is doing. There's a famous photograph of a man with a stern, defiant look on his face, arms crossed in front of him. Well, dozens, maybe even hundreds of people around him are giving the Nazi salute. You've probably seen that photograph if you've ever been on social media. In fact, you may have even seen it with that defiant man highlighted, with an arrow pointing to him and text reading, "Be that guy." Oh, shit. Is the Raging Rhino podcast comparing the national anthem to a Nazi salute? Of course not. We are nothing like Nazi Germany. No comparisons at all. I mean, it's not like half the nation currently blindly follows a charismatic yet divisive leader who blames specific groups of people for the problems of the nation. And National Socialists, economically speaking, were in favor of private ownership of business and commerce so long as it was regulated and approved by the government. That's different from our free market system, right? Okay, seriously though, I really don't intend to equate standing for the national anthem to the Nazi salute. Unless you demand that people do so, then you are taking a dangerous step towards putting the two on equal ground. You cannot demand a person do anything that violates his or her natural rights, as it is wrong to prevent people from exercising their natural rights, so too is it wrong to force them to go against their natural rights. And Colin Kaepernick is exercising his natural right. Is he doing it for the right reasons? That's subjective. If I really wanted to, I could make a case for or against that question. Is he right about his reasons? That's not as easy an answer as people want to lead us to believe. Let's be clinical for a moment. Let's take out all the emotion and go solely on raw data. the specific racial component of white cop killing black person that he is protesting is statistically less than other racial combinations. That's just a cold fact. But this isn't about cold facts. Nor should it be. This is about people in positions of power failing to do the right thing. This is about people in positions of power failing the people they are supposed to be serving. To hell with the statistics. They just tell the basic facts of the case. They do not tell you the humanity behind the statistics. Don't even try to cite statistics to the black family who just lost a son or a father or a brother to a white cop. See, I would love for the emotional aspect of all this to just stop for a few moments so people can look at things without fear and anger and hatred filtering the information. It's just not going to happen. And though the data may tell a different story from the narrative the fearmongers dictate to us, there are simply some people who will never listen. And I submit to you that they shouldn't have to listen. They lost their loved ones, and they have a right to react how they react. They should stand against injustice. They should expect their grievances to be heard and respected. They should do all they can to stop the bloodshed and promote peace and natural rights. And I'm sure you can tell where I am drawing the line of the protesters I support and those I do not. But there's more to Kaepernick's protest. Sure, the white cop, black victim narrative is what the hate mongers push on us, and therefore what most people believe is the beginning and the end of the protest. But there's a quote that didn't get a lot of play in the media. Early on in the controversy, Kaepernick said this, quote, "You have Hillary, who has called black teens or black kids super predators. You have Donald Trump, who is openly racist. We have a presidential candidate who has deleted emails and done things illegally and is a presidential candidate. That doesn't make sense to me. If that was any other person, you'd be in prison. So what is this country really standing for?" End quote. What are we standing for when we once again choose between the lesser of two evils? We're still choosing evil. What are we standing for when we continue to vote for the two political parties whose same tired policies are what has caused all of the problems we have now? You want the police to be protectors instead of combatants? I had the answer, but the big political parties don't want to hear it. Not more laws, less laws. A black man was choked to death by police officers. Why? because he was allegedly illegally selling cigarettes and then resisted arrest. Why the fuck is selling cigarettes illegal in the first place? If a man wants to sell cigarettes, then let him do it and make a little bit of money. He shouldn't have to die for it. But he did because of some stupid government law. We incarcerate more people in the United States than any other country in the world. And most of that is because of victimless crimes of drug possession and drug use. And there are a disproportionate number of minorities imprisoned for those reasons. No fucking wonder there's distrust of police. End the drug war now and let cops go after the real criminals. Democrats have kept exponentially more minorities down with their policies than the paltry few they ever lifted up. And those they did lift up were only done so by agreeing to play the game on the terms of the ones in charge. Republicans, the party of fiscal responsibility, have been just as horrible with our taxes as the Democrats. A case can even be made they've done a worse job by adding to our debt. In this country, you can only support the Republicans or the Democrats, if you agree to help erode the rights of certain groups. So they create divisiveness and teach us to hate one another. Depending on the major political party, if you're Christian, Muslim, Jewish, gay, transgendered, heteromonogamous, rich, poor, black, white, Asian, gun owner, business owner, stockholder, CEO, minimum wage earner, burger flipper, middle manager, movie star, male, female, marijuana user, Nephilist, urban dweller, backwoods hick, farmer, doctor, pharmaceutical technician, climate scientist, or bisexual non-monogamous podcaster, you have a target on your back from someone wanting to take away some of your natural rights in order to please somebody else for their vote to a big political party. That's why they play the narratives, to make you afraid that some other group is out to get you. If there's evidence to the contrary, you won't hear it. They won't let you hear it, because it doesn't suit them. Hell, they even want you to be so angry, you don't even want to listen to someone giving an alternate point of view. Fox News lies, they shout. They are certainly biased. But that's the thing. All media is biased. There was a time when every major city had at least 2 newspapers. Why? Because each one put its own spin on the news and editorials. Each one had a bias. This is no different today. One channel gives us a conservative point of view. Other channels give us liberal points of view. You tell me Fox News lies? Fine, but CBS is the one who knowingly submitted a false report on the previous president. So, even your point of view is subject to attacks of fear and anger and hate. So we are all being nudged into our tribes where we can feel safe and accepted. Then they feed us fear-mongering of the other tribes. They perpetuate the stereotypes. If you're black, then you must be liberal, or else you're an Uncle Tom. If you're a white heterosexual male, you must be a homophobic racist. And they will seek out the few bad examples and parade it out on the news for everyone to see to feed the bias. you could have 10,000 examples of goodness where people of various races, religions, and sexual orientations happily accept each other despite their differences and beliefs. But the media will find one example of prejudice, and that is all you will hear about for 2 weeks. If it bleeds, it leads. If it causes division, it will be on television. So when there truly is a problem between two tribes, we have been so overwhelmed with fear and anger and hatred that we begin defensively. I have a couple of cats who don't get along. So even when one is in a good mood and walks up to the other, you can see the distrust in their eyes. And even a brief moment of friendliness turns into a hissing contest. That's what they are programming us to become. A bunch of hissing pussies. When there truly is a problem, such as innocent people being killed by law enforcement, we cannot point fingers and accuse all people from one tribe of being liars and bigots. Not helpful. We have to be willing to listen. Even if every ounce of our personal experience tells us the other side is wrong. Hell, you may listen and still think the other side is full of shit. That happened to me recently, but that's a discussion for another time. But at least you listened. And if it takes an overrated quarterback from an overrated team desperately seeking a return to the glory of a previous generation to bring attention to a problem, then so be it. At least he's trying, using his resources the best way he knows how. And for that, I can't fault him. I support his convictions and his right to free speech, and I'm glad the NFL is not trying to silence him. The idiot commissioner finally does something right. I'm glad some people have gotten over their initial shock and bias and are taking a moment to listen. And goddammit, there are violent protesters out there, looting and hurting innocent people, and thereby perpetuating the fear, anger, and violence. I'm going to listen to the man who kneels in protest to a song. I'm not going to listen to someone who thinks the answer to a horrific crime is committing the same crime on unfortunate victims. Colin Kaepernick's protest might not be the defining moment where the racial divisiveness sown by both Democrat and Republican politicians finally turns our nation back in the correct direction, but it's a damn good try. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.